produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. This is Yes Music Podcast, episode 457. Kevin Curry and Ted Stockwell tell the story of the band White.
This is Bill Bruford, the ever-enthusiastic young drummer from the group Yes, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 457 of the Yes Music Podcast, Two Fans, Exploration of the World's Greatest Progressive Rock Band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulryan, and co-host, Mark Anthony Kay, will be along in just a moment. You can always get involved with the podcast via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. Across the globe, from Canada, Indonesia, the UK and the US, I think, it was a real pleasure for Mark and I to speak to Kevin Curry and Ted Stockwell this week about their band White, which has featured Alan White and Jeff Downes in the past. It's a great in-depth interview in which we delve into the fascinating history of the band and their strong links to Yes. The whole conversation was organised for us by Daniel Crone, so many thanks to him. We cover things such as what albums has White produced, what happens to the More Drama tour on which White were to play, and are there any plans for the future? Take a listen and let us know what you think by leaving a comment on the show notes at yesmusicpodcast.com.
Welcome to the Yes Music Podcast with Kevin Mulryan and Mark Anthony Kay.
Well, it's a very exciting opportunity to be able to speak to Ted Stockwell and Kevin Curry from the band White. So, hello, Ted.
Hello.
And hello, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Great to have you here. And Mark is here as well. Hello, Mark.
Nice. Hello there, guys. How are you doing?
Okay, then. So, White, the band White. Now, I've got in front of me the album of yours called White, simply, with Jeff Downes and Alan White on it. Now, we've also, due to your kindness, been listening to Loyal, to Origins and to White Songs in preparation to speak to you. So can you give us a very brief overview of the story of the band? Now, I know it's it's fairly convoluted, but if you could give us a sort of brief overview of what's happened over the years and up until today, is that possible?
Yes. Indirectly, I was working with Steve Boyce, and I came out from Iowa in 1986 to the Northwest, and I hooked up with Richard Hogan and Cooper Edens and Steve Boyce, and we started recording, and we created a camaraderie, and we're coming up with some music, and we had several bands, and Steve had known Alan White because nice. Alan lives out here and yeah. married Gigi, his wife, and so he lived out here, and through Microsoft, Steve had kind of connected, and he knew of Alan, and Steve also knew Ted. Well, we had a band called Merkaba, and we were working on, we released a CD. Alan did a track on it, and through that, we met Stockwell. And as things went down, Merkaba kind of transitioned through a variety of the different members. And then it finally came down to where Stockwell was going to become a part of the project. Mm-hmm. And that's when White formulated, was at that point.
Right.
Now, I'm doing kind of a brief explanation. Yeah. There's so many things involved. but that's kind of indirectly how the connection happened, was not so much me. There was Steve and Ted were together before, and they kind of... they collaborated on things that Ted can kind of go more into. But as far as me being a part of this, it was through Steve Boyce, and then I made the connection with Ted, and then Ted and I actually collaborated on, we found that collaborating was quite enjoyable. And so it kind of opened up a Ted Stockwell, Kevin Curry connection vicariously through the White Project.
Right.
Is what I look at, and we accumulated and recorded music. The White Project was ready to launch. And at that time, there was some contractual things that I won't go into. It ended up to where Stockwell left. I'll let him explain that more. And at that time, we carried on. Right. Now, let me preface this, men, all right, with something. I'm not ashamed to say that I've had extreme alcohol problems in the past.
Right.
I currently, for many years, have not drank. But back at that time period, I had some altered chemistry. And some of my reasonings on the business side weren't as well. And so I stuck on when Stockwell left. And then what we did was we continued. We took the songs that Stockwell and I had written, and we moved those over, and Jeff Downs came in. And Jeff came in and recorded on top of that. And then we also added some songs from Cooper Edens and Richard Hogan. And those are on Origins. Those are the Origins songs, I believe. But at that time we released it. I still was transitioning with my alcoholism. Things, once Stockwell left, I always considered Stockwell kind of the organizer. He's a very diligent character. I admire that about Mr. Stockwell. He's very task-orientated, and he's a brilliant engineer. So on top of a brilliant keyboard player. And he sits down and does the work. And so basically, I felt that things were kind of becoming disorganized. My alcoholism wasn't working, and we just kind of parted ways. And that was back in 2005, 2004. But then, thankfully, Stockwell had all of this material, and we had a whole live show that we had done, which came out great, that was basically sitting in the vault and needed someone to resurrect, which Stockwell did, and did quite well, and brought it back. And then, of course, there's the original White CD, which was with Stockwell. It was the formation of White, was with Stockwell Curry.
Yeah.
And at that point, when I think back to that, there was a fervor. There was a camaraderie. We were a band. Now, we knew, of course, in honor of Yes, most definitely. And it was always a known fact with Alan that none of these projects ever get in the way of the Yes brand. Correct? And so at that time, right now, basically, White continued on and replaced me. They replaced both Stockwell and I. And they've continued on to play. But then after the work, and it took many years, and Stockwell has brought this back up and brought this together for everyone to hear, I think it's miraculous. Because at the time when I think of our camaraderie, that's what I focus on. Is when we recorded this stuff, at the time when it was manifested, we were ready to roll. It was a great spirit that was happening at that time. And just due to circumstances, it didn't transpire. But now we're fortunate to have the recordings, which to me still depict that fire from back then. And it was a good thing. I know that's a lot, and it still isn't solid, but that's kind of indirectly how it went.
So my history began with Alan when I was at Microsoft. And back then, Mike Tiano had organized a kind of a technology conference and invited via then Yes Management Alan to come to Microsoft to speak. And there was kind of a fury of trying to get a panel together to speak with Alan, because they never really expected Alan to show up. So I got called in. I had a recording studio. I was all doing engineering management at Microsoft at the time. But I had been recording bands, writing, had a recording studio. And so I came in to ask some of the music technology questions and that. And at that meeting, that was my first meeting with Alan. We got on really well and ended up enjoying a fair number of beers together and talking. Alan was fascinated by what was going on with Microsoft. He's always been very interested in technology and how it could further his career and Yes. This was during Talk was being recorded, which was their first all digital recording.
Yes.
And so we started talking, and Alan was very curious about, you know, I knew Bill Gates, I knew Melinda personally. And so he was curious about how things actually worked at a up-and-coming corporation at the time called Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And I was curious about how things worked in a large band called Yes. And so we had lots to talk about, and the beer was always enjoyable for the two of us. And that's kind of how our friendship began. When I first met him, we hadn't done any recording. I didn't invite him to the studio, although, of course, I had designs upon that, as would anyone. But we spent probably several years just talking. And then there was a number of jam sessions. And I ended up starting to play more and more with Alan. He then started inviting me on tours. And I started going out on Yes tours. This is when they were playing probably around 10,000 seaters, 15,000 seater sheds. I was out during the talk tour. That was my first, you know, really getting to know Tony, Kay, John, Chris. And so I got to know all of them. Plus, the other part that was very interesting to me was the how do things run? So they had some really pretty great tour managers and accountants. And Bob Quant was one of the guys. And I found out the actual financial economics of how you make that machine run. Mm-hmm. So they were all things I was very, very interested in that were used later on during the aforementioned contract issues that Kevin mentioned earlier. So through that, I had Alan play in my band called Treason. Alan played on the first record, as did Billy Sherwood, and Billy Sherwood mixed that record down at the office. As a matter of fact, when we were mixing it, Billy was negotiating his way into Yes. At that time. So I got to know Billy really well. Again, Billy was explaining to me the financial and political aspects of negotiating into an organization such as Yes. Right. So I had that kind of background, and then I did a second record with Ann Wilson sang on it, John Giblin from Phil Collins and Peter Gabriel played on it. Yeah. Alan and Igor Korshev actually did play on it, but sadly the track didn't make it onto the record. Ah. Ron St. Germain produced it. Steve Boyce was involved in the engineering. And so that was kind of a bunch of us being thrown together. That was Steve, Alan, and I working on that half. Right. And then the Origins record actually was material that after a fair amount of Merkaba had left, and there was Rick Hogan on guitar and the main writer, along with Cooper Edens, who didn't actually perform. He just wrote lyrics. Steve Boyce and Alan and Kevin had recorded a number of tracks at Steve Boyce's studio, Color Sound. And Steve and I had been working together on Spinning, which was the second Treason record. And Steve called me up and said, hey, I've got these tracks. See if you can do something with them.
Right.
And so he gave them to me. And you have to put some stuff in context here. Merkaba, in the record that was released where Alan played on a track, Olare Male, I think that's how to pronounce it. Kevin will correct me later. We recorded that actually at my studio. But there was didge players. There was a flautist, there was a guitar player, there was a rotating drummer. Sometimes they had kit, sometimes they had traps, sometimes they had percussion. It was, I think I've called it a tribe before.
Yes.
Quite a bit different than Yes, quite a bit different than Treason, and quite a bit different than what White was unveiled as. So when I got it, this was, for me, the first time where I wasn't writing and didn't have a whole band to record. This was basic tracks already done, bass, acoustic guitar, some acoustic guitar sketches, vocals were done, and drums were done. So for me, this was fantastic. I could scribble and play out my Rick Wakeman fantasies by scribbling all over this thing in ways that I typically didn't get to do in Treason because I was too focused on guitars and things like that. And I should also mention Carl Haug was the guitar player in Treason. So that kind of is another tie-in. So I did this, a bunch of work, and I ended up playing half of the acoustic guitars. Steve Boyce played half of the acoustic guitars, and I played all the electric guitars on there, as there was an electric guitar player. And I took the band in a radically different direction, thinking that they were just going to say I was absolutely insane. And in fact, when I handed it to Steve, I laughed. I said, "Well, I know you're not going to use this, but I had a great time. Thanks for the fun." And they liked it. And next thing you knew, we were playing some festivals. I think it was the Cherry Blossom Festival. Alan was on drums. I was playing keyboards. The flautist and didge player were gone. And we were out as a five-piece. Rick Hogan was playing acoustic guitar. We started playing, and we played all the songs that are on Origins were played by Merkaba with Alan on drums and me on keyboards. And there's videotape of that someplace with us playing several shows,
right? Yes.
In that incarnation. And the next thing you knew, Boyce suggested, he goes, "Well, why don't you write with Rick Hogan?" So we wrote a song on there called Shine, and that's actually on Loyal. And then I had written Dream Away, and Rick wasn't a big fan of that. And he said, "No, I'm not really interested in working with you on that one." So Curry said, "I'll do it." And we really, we created something that we felt incredibly strongly at the time. When we played it to Alan, I should mention there's a YouTube series on the original White Band where we go in track by track and talk about a bunch of this stuff.
Yes.
And one of the things that I think I noted on there is Alan has an interesting character in that he'll never compliment anyone directly. And so you won't really know. You'll get little, he'll have his little quirks and twitches, or you'll see some excitement on his face. He's a little mysterious that way, but you'll always hear about it through the grapevine. If he's really excited about it, it'll come back at you indirectly. And he really liked Dream Away. And when we did that one, Kevin and I looked at each other. We said, "Well, let's do the next one." And that was kind of how things really progressed. We ended up, Kevin and or I ended up writing 8 of the original 11 on Loyal. Carl Haug brought in a really great song called All Come Around. Steve and Cooper Edens brought in a nice reggae song. And we had another Cooper Edens song. Yeah, Mighty Love, yeah. And we had another really great song we called Maps that was written by Hogan and Cooper Edens that I think is a really magical song. And that was kind of the beginning of that. So that kind of talks about Origins, which was never intended to be released. We decided to focus on the material that was more Kevin and myself and Carl and Steve had written. And then, so the White Songs album was done on January, was it 28th, 29th, 2005, in front of 1,200 people in Seattle. And it was the first formal unveiling of the original White Band in front of a large audience. And it was the very first dipping of our toes into getting ready for what it was going to become the more drama tour. It was Billy Sherwood had Conspiracy with Jay Schellen and Chris Squire. It was going to be Conspiracy. Chris kind of liked the idea of a Conspiracy and Treason tour, but we renamed the band White. So that was kind of the original incarnation, how it was supposed to go out as originally imagined. From there, we did that show that night, and it was about an hour set. Did 3 wonderful Yes songs and did 5 or 6 off of Loyal. And we captured that night. And it was sitting there, none of us had listened to it until I actually brought up a song called The Way You See Me. And I was just quite curious to how did we actually sound that time. And things were coming up. It was about a year or two before our 15th anniversary. And I was kind of curious to see how did it sound. And frankly, it blew me away. I thought, wow, even if I wasn't playing in this band, this is a pretty kick-ass band. So I mixed the damn thing.
Yeah.
And that's what you got. So that's kind of a long story. Kevin mentioned that they've gone and played several shows with a different keyboard player. I think several different keyboard players and a different vocalist. But as far as I know, there hasn't been anything else released other than the material. And this cache of 3 records really represents the core and the formation and the defining sound of the band.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's fascinating you should mention the More Drama Tour. I've managed to get myself one of those discs which has got white tracks on it, and that we're going to be given away at the events themselves. In fact, that must have been a disappointment not to be able to complete that idea.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there was high hopes on that. I think, you know, as originally envisioned, and so again, I'll put in context, this was the 35th anniversary tour. So we were recording Loyal during the 35th anniversary tour. And right. I was in Japan with Alan. It was Alan, the classic lineup of Alan, Chris, Steve, Rick, and John.
Yes, indeed.
And we, you know, they were finishing that up. There was tensions running pretty high in Yes at that time. And the idea that Billy, Chris, and I originally had was, well, in between breaks, because it became apparent that there was going to be longer breaks between Yes outings, that something along the lines of a More Drama Tour, I almost said More Trauma Tour, Freudian slip, I guess, yeah. that type of a venture where you would take Yes members and showcase their solo projects, you know, for a year or 18-month hiatus in between Yes, might actually provide a little bit more life, a little bit more variety for the band members themselves of Yes, so they weren't continually playing the same material. It kind of gave them a nice break and a nice rhythm. And so that was the original idea behind that. And so, yeah, it not happening, of course, was a big disappointment.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious about something here in regards to influences. So what era of Yes would you say has influenced the band, like when you guys were in it the most?
That's a great question. And I'll speak from me. I know for me, when we started looking at recreating some Yes songs, it appeared that the drama songs were definitely something that I resonated with. I resonate with all the Yes songs. I mean, they're phenomenal. You know, the whole catalog. But it was the drama for me, and particularly Machine Messiah was the song that I really enjoyed and I wanted to recreate, right? And I thought it would be a great live song. But at any rate, that, in my mind's eye, that was what I enjoyed performing, was the drama stuff, which is what we were going to do when we went out on the More Drama Tour. Were those two songs. And it's not necessarily because of the personnel involved with it. I liked those songs personally, and I enjoyed singing them. Back to a question that was said before, it was disheartening back then. There was a lot going on when it didn't unfold and happen. And it was disappointing, but I think it created an awareness for us.
Yes.
You know what? Things happen for reasons, right? And this wasn't meant to come to fruition.
Yeah.
And that's why I think where we're at right now is actually phenomenal, because here we are, in essence, being able to recreate what that thing was. And I think that's awesome. And back to the question, we were going to recreate a lot of the drama stuff. At that point. Now, we were doing, those were the only two at that time that we were really working on. I think, wasn't that right, Stockwell?
We had done a couple of others.
Of course, Changes. Now, Changes was the first one that we recreated and did with our own style. But then for me, it was moving more towards the drama at that time, just to recreate, to go out and play live. Now, other things could have manifested, of course. You know, I'm sure we were talking about doing a variety of Yes songs. You know, as we get going, as actually what was thought of when we got out on the More Drama Tour, we would be able to collaborate and come up with more ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, like, hey, let's do this one. You know, or hey, how about this? There was actual ideas that we might even be out there and going and just throw one out there for the night and learn it, you know. It was going to be a fun ordeal. But yeah, specifically, which coming back to your question, I don't think any of it was would have been left out by any means. It would have just been brought forth in the fire of the moment, which is the way I like to work.
So the drama stuff was definitely, that was my first Yes record, and I was a huge fan of it. We were looking at playing things that were not in regular rotation with Yes.
Yeah.
So drama at that moment had not been played in, was it 25 years or something like that?
Yeah.
We had also looked at doing some stuff off of Relayer. And there was a couple that I had started working on. You know, a number of the ideas that Billy has brought forward in the last couple of Yes tours by bringing Patrick Mraz on and really starting to pay tribute to the less well-traveled Yes songs. They were things that we had considered doing. Again, for variety, for the 60% of Yes that was out on the road that wanted to play some of that stuff. As well as, you know, of course, for me to go out and be playing some of the Wakeman favorites that I would want to play,
yeah,
wouldn't necessarily make sense from a fan point of view when they could actually hear the real deal. So we were looking at trying to do something a little bit different, playing some of the less popular stuff from a concert point of view, but I think they were being fan favorites, and just mix it up a little bit so that the entire Yes catalog could be represented over, if you looked at it like a Yes cycle and then call it a more drama tour cycle. Between those two comprising one cycle, you would have a lot more of the Yes catalog played during that time, as well as the solo albums. In Chris's case, it would be Conspiracy, or I guess Sin is what they ended up wanting to take out, or our Alan's material as well. That's all stuff that we had looked at.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, did you ever have any thoughts of, you know, submitting a song for a Yes album? I mean, the other way around, you know, because something like Fate or Love Will Always Return, you could hear that on a Yes album, couldn't you?
Great question. You know, as far as formulating the thought process to that, I don't think it was ever formidably done. But yeah, I could definitely see that. You know, the thing is when originally, when Stockwell, and he gave a great rendition of things, probably better than I did. But at that point, when Stockwell brought forth Dream Away, and the way Stockwell worked is there's a variety of ways of writing, and I'm a singer-songwriter. So I'm melodies and words. I play a little keyboards, I play a little guitar, but not enough to do on stage. But that's the way I've always written through the years. And so usually guitar players are a lot that I work with. They have chord progressions, and they'd say, what do you think of this? And then I'd say, hey, I got a melody for that and some words. Stockwell likes to work this way. He has the whole thing done. And then he coins it. So he gave me this music bed, said Dream Away, and he gave it to everyone. Remember that, Stockwell? He gave it to everyone and said, hey, look, do you want to put some melody and words on this? I see Dream Away. And so, hey, I looked at it. It resonated great with me. I came up with, I thought of a melody. I thought of a concept. The strange thing is that a lot of the way I do my words, people may think of them as love songs. They're really internal. It's really about the inside of yourself. So Dream Away isn't a love song. It's a love song of yourself. And so I liked it. So I went with that. And then like Stockwell conveyed is that went well. So he had this other one called New Day. I said, well, let me hear that. And the one that I like to drive at is Ride of the Rain. He plays this piano piece, and I'm listening to it, and I go, what'd you do with that? And he goes, it's just sitting there. I call it Ride of the Rain. I said, awesome. So the whole idea, getting back to, you know, the original formation of White, a lot of it for me, I was starting to get rekindled because Stockwell was providing a piece where before a lot of the stuff I was doing was Cooper Eden's and Richard Hogan's songs on Merkaba. And I was adding some words and maybe some melodies, but I was able to get back to my fire again, is what I'm saying. And Stockwell did that, and here was the vehicle. And it was working well. And on top of working with Alan White, and which, to digress a little bit, I'm actually a frustrated drummer. My idea was to be a drummer. Back when I was in grade school, I was going to be a drummer. And the guy I was forming the band with, he was a year older than me. he became a drummer. And then he said, no, Kevin, you're the singer. And so I, you know, my whole idea of doing things. So, wow, let's do a CD with Alan White. Heck yeah. It goes along with where I'm coming from, you know. So this is awesome. It's all about expression. Let's come. Let's bring it together. This is awesome. Let's do this. So yeah, Stockwell and I in the formation of White, and then Stockwell has always, as he's conveyed, he's being a keyboard player and a phenomenal keyboard player, has always had that vast interest, which I've always considered yes, because they create such phenomenal musical landscapes. That was the thing, is that I thought Stockwell provided that. It was very interesting.
So the live album is something that I really enjoyed listening to. The production of it and the mix of it was really, really fantastic. I mean, in my car, it sounded like absolutely brilliant. It was like sitting in the arena listening to it. So my hat's off to the person who mixed it, which I'm guessing is probably you, Ted, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. So you guys obviously did two Yes songs on there. So I'm not going to ask, obviously, which is your favorite song, because there's only two to pick from. But I'm going to rephrase this question and ask you, if you guys could go now and play live again, what Yes songs would you want to do from the canon now? Or what songs do you think you guys would perform well as a band?
You know, I think we would probably hit some of the stuff from Relayer. I love a lot of the Mraz stuff, and I don't think it got represented as well over the years as it could have. Of course, you know, any of the three classic records from the Yes record or Yes album, Close to the Edge and Fragile, they're incredibly fun to play from a keyboard point of view. Tony Kaye's Hammond, I mean, to me, he's the master of the Hammond. He really understands the soul, the growl. And, you know, I've talked with Tony about this, and we both have always thought that Hammond organ is the keyboard player's electric guitar. Mm-hmm. And not all keyboard players get that. Tony really gets that. John Lord was another guy who really got that. So, you know, that stuff and Tony's sound, you know, to me, the sound of his Hammond on the Yes album is, wow, it's amazing. It's the gold standard for me. And while I love playing all that stuff, Close to the Edge, I've played live, I've played Roundabout with Alan, and it's great fun to play. But again, if I put myself in the audience, who do I want to see playing that? I want to see Rick Wakeman playing that.
Yeah.
So, you know, much as it's fun for me to do it, I don't think the audience would enjoy it as much. Now, if you look at some of the less trodden albums, and I go back to Relayer a lot because I think there's, you know, Mraz does great electric piano work. His bends and his lead work is very guitar-like and very unusual. I happen to love the way he does bends on Moog. Those things are really unique and very uniquely Mraz. And again, you know, the stuff that Jeff Downes did on Drama, I'll go back and say that was the first Yes album that I ever had was Drama. His keyboard playing and just the sounds and orchestrations that he did were phenomenal. The energy on Drama, especially when you take a look at, you know, the Tormata, which was before it, the energy and sound, I think it was Hugh Padgham produced it. There's just a clarity on Drama that you hadn't heard in a while on Yes records. And I loved that. I mean, just it was such a cutting edge sound in 1980. And so I love, you know, what Trevor Horn and Jeff Downes brought, and just the focus that the band really was able to rekindle during that period.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you mentioned the sound of White songs, and thank you for that. We spent a long time on that to get that to sound that way. I could probably go on and bore you to tears with the amount of computers and processing that we use so that you could really hear everything.
No, it wouldn't bore Mark, certainly no.
Well, we'll have another talk on that one offline.
Great.
But we really did some amazing stuff to make that record sound that way. And I, you know, we did three Yes songs. We did Changes, we did Machine Messiah, and we did Tempest Fugit. What I like about our versions, and I hope this doesn't sound too immodest, but I like the sound quality that we did, the fact that all the parts are there. We really spent a lot of time, you know, Carl Haug, the guitar player in White, and I, we did our own sessions where we spent time going over and over all of the unison playing and the trade-offs and the back and forth and making sure we got the sounds to match as close as possible. We really wanted to pay homage to the original recording. This is something that I remember when Igor Khorishev was in Yes. Igor is a fantastic player, and he was a very good friend of mine. And he was really, you know, when I talked with him about his choices, he was really clear. He says, listen, the fans want to hear the way it was on the record. I'm going to give them that, and I'm going to make sure I'm 100% or as, you know, as close as I can get to 100% with that in mind. Yes. And that's what we wanted to do as well. So if we were going to go back and, you know, resurrect some of the less trodden Yes material, I would want it to sound as good as possible, better than it had been recorded. Relayer is a cool record. I'm not a fan of the production. I think it's messy. It's just a messy record production-wise. It's not clear. And I would love to redo some of those songs with a clarity that you can really hear all the bits, because there's some fantastic bits there, but I don't think the mix is the best.
I think it also has to do with the fact that they did that at Chris Squire's home studio, which is probably not nowhere near as, you know, like soundproofed or probably as well done as a proper studio like AdVision or something like that.
Sure. And even just the complexity of the material at the time. I mean, if you take a look at the technology that we used, we had two computers, an HDX2 system. There was something like 85 processors that were all run on a Pro Tools system. So I could spend, and I did spend excruciating, and that took 2 years to mix that record.
Wow.
because I just wasn't satisfied until it was perfect. So we just kept going over all the fader moves channel by channel. And there was a couple hundred channels on that record, on White Songs. And to make it sound that good, it took several computers and close to 100 processors and a bunch of automation and 2 years of my time to make that happen. They just didn't have the number of hands, ability, or technology back in 1974 when they did Relayer to possibly do what was probably necessary to pull off with that complexity of material.
Well, we're coming close to the end of the time that we've got to record. I'd just like to finish off with a question to both of you, and you can answer this in turn. Starting off with Kevin, shall we? In the next 10 years, what do you think Yes should do, and what would you like to see yourself doing in the next 10 years? So shall we start with Kevin?
Yeah, thank you. Loaded question there, my friend. We all would love to know what we do. No, great question. Could I first say this? Is as a vocalist, I want to bring forth the fact that, you know, when you're working with the Yes catalog, you're working with a legendary vocalist. You're working with John Anderson.
Yeah.
And he has one of those voices that are highly respected. And I've known this through the years as a vocalist, you know, doing your own stuff, it is always more emotional and always better. If you're going to try to replicate someone, there are certain vocalists that you're going to find a hard time trying to do. And John Anderson is definitely one of those. Yeah. So I honor him in that and have respected him, you know, in the transition of what was going to formulate with Yes. And even if what I would recreate moving forward to do some more recording with Ted, I always keep that in mind when I'm looking at Yes songs, as I'm looking at the emotion that John is putting forth there in his words. And can I even do that any justice recreating some of those things, especially with John Anderson, and there's other vocalists that way, you just don't touch it, if you know what I mean. I have done Roundabout a couple times out there, like Ted had mentioned. We recreated it for some live shows. It went well, but there's an essence to that song and what John brings that if it's not John singing it, it's going to take your mind somewhere. And I don't like to be the guy on stage when that's happening, if you know what I mean. So I think beforehand, you're really going to redo a John Anderson song here? I just wanted to lay that out there. Moving forward, I think what I said earlier is that we're very fortunate, I think, you know, in regards to music and the people involved here. And here we are, 2020, and here is some material that can go out there, that can be exhibited. Here is some passion that was brought forth, and it still has that fire. And Stockwell did the work. He definitely went in, spent years and hours recreating and brought forth this thing. And I truthfully think it's worthy of just putting out there. And I'm a humble individual. I'm a type of guy that I like to have fun. Been that way. That's why I got into music, folks. Back in grade school, is I liked the idea of the camaraderie of individuals coming together and there's no boss. You hear me? There's no boss. You know, where on this planet can you get great creative people together and nobody has to be the boss? And I found that in music. And so, you know, moving forward, I think we could all work together on this thing and put it out there. I'd like to see it go out there. I think definitely Stockwell and I are going to be doing some more collaborating. We've already done some collaborating. I don't know future-wise. I don't have the answers as far as where Alan would be coming from and where he's at in his life right now. But I could definitely see Stockwell and I doing some more stuff, and we definitely want to stand behind the release of this material. Most definitely. And I really want to thank both of you for allowing us to come on and banter.
No problem at all. It's been very enjoyable. So, Ted.
So, Kevin gave a fantastic, circuitous answer and didn't answer your question.
I'm the mercurial one. I'll get out. Yep.
So, listen, I think there's always a balance between two opposing, sometimes opposing forces. You want to create music that your fans enjoy. You know, I've heard Alan say probably a million times that he loves seeing the smiling faces on the people as he performs. And that's a genuine thing that he says. And that's a genuine thing that I think any performer or musician should want to do. You know, back in the days where you were singing for your supper, you needed to please the crowd if you wanted a full belly that night. So there's definitely that aspect to it. But at the same time, you know, kind of paying homage to what Kevin's just saying, where there is no boss, you need to do things that make you happy. So in terms of what should Yes do, they have to balance those two things. And, you know, they've had a number of incarnations and I think the Queensryche split that they've gone through with ARW separated and playing, you know, different types of material, playing to both of their strengths of both of the bands. I think in that particular expression, they were making themselves happy. Mm. It seemed to work well with the crowds. I mean, fans went to both shows. And I mean, I sure did.
Yes.
So I think that's kind of the answer in terms of what's happening in terms of what they should be doing. You know, music tastes always change. And when you're out and about, I'm sitting here right now in Jakarta, Indonesia, and there's a ton of music. Most of the world is locked down with COVID, but I saw a fantastic 7-piece band just last night playing here in Jakarta, playing fantastic music. And the crowd, it was a packed club, and the crowd just ate it all up. All new to me. Steve Lillywhite, the famous U2 producer, happens to be my neighbor. And so he's here enjoying the music of Indonesia as much as I do. Again, I get back to the crowd and the musicians here seem to be able to satisfy both. I think that's what Yes needs to do.
Could I just say one last thing, Kevin? I'm sorry to interrupt there. Is, you know, just with a broad stroke here, and this would be my own personal opinion, I've always felt that music transcends. And that's why, you know, in reality with bands, there can be people, and I've been many times in situations where I haven't been getting along with my bandmate. I haven't been getting along with my my other person. But the minute you hit the stage, that's the beauty of the music. Is it always does, and I know all of us as artists know that. That absolutely. There's going to be things, but if you think bigger and you think about the music and the reason why we did it, why we wrote it, why we recorded it, why it went around, every time, and I think Yes could incorporate that too, is if you want to do it, go out there. Once you hit the stage, it's going to happen. And it should. Just push through a lot of those other things that yes, are yes. superficial, that are emotional, that are human, and let's get back down to what all of us really know, and that's the fire and the passion and the expression of music and putting it together. That's all I Brilliant. Got. Thank you.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you very much indeed, both of you, for coming onto the Yes Music podcast this week and talking to us so fascinatingly. It's been absolutely brilliant. And that we will put in the show notes links to everything that we've been talking about today so that everyone has a chance to go and listen and find out more about what White have done over the years and hopefully in the future as well. So thank you very much indeed, Ted.
You're very welcome. Thank you again for inviting us. It was a pleasure.
And thank you, Kevin.
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate it immensely.